Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied.
Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast from the Football Grad Network. My name is Manuel Feit, and as pretty much always, I'm joined by Stefan Biankowski. Stefan, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm going very well. Another great weekend of German football. I know I say that every time I'm on, but it really was a great weekend of German football. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to sinking my teeth into it.
I'm really looking forward to it too, because I am getting to do it from Germany, which has been a long time, 19 months from not being able to go home because of COVID and all that kind of stuff. So it was a bit of an odyssey to get here. Had to get a negative COVID test and had all the paperwork and everything done and locked it all into the pre-flight. And then when I arrived in Germany, Stefan, the border guard just asked, are you vaccinated? And I was ready to put all my documents, and he just waved me through. So I guess welcome back to Germany. And I did get to go to the Bayern game on Saturday, and they did accept my Canadian vaccination record. I was quite pleased with that as well, because you need to scan a QR code here, which I have, but it's a Canadian one. And of course, it didn't read. But it does help to speak the language. I was able to argue my way into the Allianz Arena and into the media zone. And I'm very sad to report the buffet is gone. You just get a lunch pack that you get to put onto take with you to your media seat. But oh well. The game itself was worth it. I calculated this, I saw 87.5% of all goals that were scored at the 3:30 kickoff. What do you think of that, Stefan?
That's incredible. I mean, I'd like to also point out to listeners that you're texting myself, Chris, and oh my God, I'm just laughing myself and Bryce about how your day was going. And I just remembered at one point, I think I was working, I got your text came through saying, oh, the buffet's shut. I said, oh my God, I'm in a very different situation from him right now, where I'm sitting trying to work and you're getting upset about a buffet going missing. But you couldn't have picked a better game to come back. It was as if Bayern Munich just decided that they were going to put on a show for you, because, and as far as I could tell, Bochum were more than happy to go along with it, because I don't think you'll ever see a more one-sided game of football in the Bundesliga this season. And I know, I think we're probably going to go on to talk about, you know, what kind of ramifications that has for the league, and, you know, people use results like this to kind of bash the Bundesliga. But I honestly thought Bochum were just as bad as Bayern were brilliant. I mean, there are obviously kind of circumstances where you think, okay, great, this is Bayern at top level. When a Leroy Sané free kick, for example, goes into the top corner, you're obviously thinking, right, they're obviously they're up for it today. But as good as Bayern were, it just kind of felt like every single pass that Bochum made, even into their own net at one point just before half time, you know, Bayern Munich didn't have to get a first gear at all, and it was just a complete, it was like a training match. And you know, I feel sorry for Bochum. I think it's maybe the first full 90 minutes I've watched them this season, and it's probably not a fair representation of them, but they did not look Bundesliga standard at all. And I think when I was looking through some of the German press, actually, there was some columnists making that argument possibly, but I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I did wonder about that. Like Thomas Reis, I went to the press conference after, right, as well, and socially distanced press conference, very well organized in the big amphitheater inside the Allianz Arena, where every fourth seat was allowed to be occupied. And Thomas Reis and Julian Nagelsmann, this is one of my first in-person press conferences I've been to since COVID started, because in most leagues they reassume, right? And I do like the fact it was in person, because you get the emotional responses from the coaches much better than you do via Zoom, right? It just seems all filtered. And I thought it was really interesting how deflated Thomas Reis was after the game, and how apologetic he was towards his own fans, because there was a huge traveling support that came with this Bochum team, right? They were all in that top corner in the very top of the Allianz Arena. And they were very loud, and I thought the support was actually excellent, but he was very apologetic because this was Bochum's largest defeat in the Bundesliga. It was only one goal shy of the result that Schalke received last season. And I actually thought there was quite a lot of parallels to that game, Bayern against Schalke, right? A lot of talk was made about after that result against Schalke as well, how big the discrepancy between Bayern and some of the other teams are in the Bundesliga. But some of the teams that just don't have the quality, and I actually think that Bochum don't have Bundesliga quality. Thomas Reis said it after the game. He said that there was more than one class difference between those two teams, and I actually agree. It seems like they're almost like an accidental promoted side. Like some of the players you see there, they're just not on a Bundesliga level. And some of, you know, Gavola, for example, going forward, just too slow. They were trying to play a counter style of football, but they just don't have the players to spring forward. And defensively, they were in shambles. I mean, without Manuel Riemann in goal, it would have probably been 10 or 11 or 12. And I just don't think that they have the quality at the moment. And I mean, that's maybe a different discussion. It's like, teams like Bochum coming into the league, we seem to be getting this more and more, right? That you see these teams accidentally promoted from the Bundesliga and just not having the quality to survive in the league. Greuther Fürth is another example. I'm seeing Greuther Fürth on Friday against Bayern. I'm expecting a very similar result, because I think some of these teams are just not Bundesliga level. And that actually begs another question, is we have so many blue chips clubs in the second division, right? Hamburg, Bremen, Hannover. Then we have blue chips clubs even in the third league with Kaiserslautern in 1860, and that have so much more potential and so much more power to properly survive in this league. And that begs the question, is this like a structural problem almost in German football? What do you think, Stefan?
You basically took the words out of my mouth there, actually. I was going to make the suggestion that this is obviously a kind of a natural almost balancing of the scales because of how many bigger clubs have been relegated in recent seasons. And it just seems to me that this is kind of the natural consequence of that. You know, in the grand scheme of things, Schalke, Hamburg, Werder Bremen, etc., these clubs should be in the Bundesliga taking up spaces where the likes of Bochum and Greuther Fürth have since been promoted. And that's not really to take away anything from these clubs that have got promoted. They've been promoted, obviously, off the back of their own success, off the back of what they've done on the pitch and off the pitch. But a large part of it is also down to just how bad a lot of these kind of huge clubs have been. I mean, Schalke were absolutely hopeless last season. And, you know, if it comes to, obviously, I mean, I know there's some examples of maybe like playoff situations where the big clubs prove that they deserve to stay in the league. But it is possibly a concern for the Bundesliga. I mean, I don't want to sit here and suggest that Bochum being in the Bundesliga is bad for the Bundesliga, because I don't think it is. And, you know, if you look at Serie A or the Spanish top division, they also have smaller clubs that people who don't pay attention to the league maybe aren't aware of, and sometimes they get battered by the bigger clubs. So it's kind of a natural way of things. I think the only issue is that when we compare the Bundesliga to the Premier League, which is just something that's constantly happening, and it's not just something it's not just something that people like you and I do, it's something that the leagues and the clubs themselves do. I was actually speaking to a chief executive at one of the Bundesliga clubs last week, and he went straight on to comparisons to the Premier League. So it's something that the league and its clubs are constantly talking about. But having these, because the Premier League has so much money from bottom to top, you don't often see this much of a disparity between even maybe like a newly promoted side and a team who are obviously been winning the championship for some time now. You do from occasion, you certainly do, but
City do it all the time, right?
Yeah,
I mean, sure. City do results like that against even some of the bigger clubs, so it does happen there as well.
It does, yeah, you're right. I don't know. I honestly don't think it's a huge issue. I also just don't think it's a fair example to use to bash the league, because I just think, you know, Bayern away is just a result that Bochum are probably always going to lose. And it's a result they're always going to lose probably quite heavily. So, you know, I think they'll move on from it. I don't think Bayern will actually take a huge amount from this game because it was so easy. And then maybe we all just have to accept that and move on rather than worrying about what it means for the league.
I think it was actually the second easiest game this last week, because I watched a game against Barcelona and I've never seen a more one-sided 3-0 than that one. And there was a scene, I think, when I don't remember which Barcelona, it was Alba who came off, and he was just absolutely destroyed. Like, he was sitting on the bench and just, he looked like he was going to throw up, right? And I think this is what we have to remember. Bayern Munich, they don't just do this to the likes of Bochum. I mean, they did exactly the same thing against Barcelona. And there was one point where I thought we're going to see another 8-2. So, you know, Bochum are in good company. I do think there is something to the debate of how clubs in Germany are run. And I know you tweeted something really great about, I think the league is very much aware of it, and they're fighting essentially UEFA and FFP to be way more strict. And I personally think that needs to happen, because the Bundesliga is probably the league that benefits the most from a more strict salary cap. Because when you look at the average expenditure on salary for Bundesliga teams is something like 56%, right? 56% of the income is going to player salary, which is the lowest in all of the top leagues in Europe. Premier League is somewhere at 64%, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it actually is. So it's an interesting one. I do also think, and this is another one, to go back to big clubs and the way they run, Bayern Munich are a membership club, right? But they are one of the few membership clubs where politics is very much left behind. The politics of the club, the internal politics of the club, are not influenced by the members as much as it is in the other clubs. Schalke is a great example. Hamburg is a great example. So these big membership clubs, as great as it is for German teams to be big membership clubs, at the same time, those members demand a lot of control of the teams that they are members of. And if you have these large fractions and all of them want influence, you get situations like Hamburg, you get situations like Schalke or Bremen. And I think that's maybe another one where you maybe need to talk about the structure without destroying 50+1. Maybe German clubs just need to be restructured. And I think that's just another debate for another podcast, but I just find it interesting that a lot of these smaller clubs like Bochum, like Fürth, like Bielefeld, they manage to get into the Bundesliga because they're often better run than some of these larger membership clubs, because politics isn't as big of a thing there, but then they don't have the resources to necessarily compete because they're in smaller markets. So it's kind of like the balance isn't quite there, but yeah, it's an interesting one. And I think when we talk about large membership clubs, Stefan, we can take this and we can talk right away about another big membership club in German football, because they played RB Leipzig, Köln, and I thought that was maybe the best game on the weekend, because it was a battle, right? Köln played really well. A club that I personally feel is always kind of underachieving, considering the size of it's 111,000 members now, right? It's fourth largest in Germany. But they really battled Leipzig, and I thought that was maybe the most interesting game of the match day. What did you think?
Yeah, it was an absolutely encapsulating game. I kind of had it on with one eye watching it, and just as the game went on, it was just it just was so end-to-end from both sides. You know, I thought Leipzig were probably the better team in the first half, and then obviously Cologne got a goal early on in the second half from Modesta, and as is always the case at that stadium, the place just seemed to be completely jumping. And obviously there's the added context to all that Cologne have also had a decent start to the season. RB Leipzig obviously have not. You know, there's maybe some people going so far as to say this was a kind of must-win game for Jesse Marsch. And whether or not that was the case, you definitely felt there was a huge degree of pressure on Leipzig in this game. They went about the match looking like a team just desperately looking for some hope, and they just couldn't get it, whether they were hitting shots off the post or two goals disallowed. And even though I actually thought they were the better team against Cologne for most of the first period of the game, I felt as though Cologne almost gained confidence from, as silly as it sounds, Leipzig's inability to score and their constant misfortune. And obviously Modeste scored. And then, you know, obviously after Cologne scored, I thought they actually kind of grew into the match and they were almost the better side. So it was just fantastic going back and forth. And, you know, the last kind of 20 minutes when Leipzig were chasing the equaliser and then a late winner, the drama was just outstanding. And it was a fantastic, it was a really fantastic kind of, you know, late Saturday game for viewers to watch as well. And it was a great advert for the Bundesliga as well, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too. I was in the edge of my seat. I thought that Leipzig, they were going to score a second. I think all the things that you want to see from them, you saw laid on. And at the same time, though, I did think that this one was a must win for Jesse Marsch. I think we broke it down last week, right, where we said that he's now going into a run of games. Because when you take the first few games in the Bundesliga, they pretty much had the same results last year against the same oppositions. But now they're going into a run of games against teams that I personally think they have to beat. I mean, even going back into midweek, that game against Manchester City, it was just, I'm struggling to see an identity. And I think that's what worries me the most when you look at this team, because in so many ways, it's almost like they're imprisoned between Nagelsmann's system and what Marsch wants to do. And I spent Sunday in Salzburg, and I went to Red Bull Salzburg, Marsch's former club, and I spoke to some people there and about Marsch and the difficulties that he's having. And they were saying it wasn't always easy in the beginning with him in Salzburg either, which I guess is true. But I don't think, I almost wonder whether he doesn't, it's so interesting to contrast it to what Nagelsmann has done at Bayern. Nagelsmann walked into the dressing room and he hasn't really changed that much. He's only tweaking it slightly. Marsch goes into Leipzig and he changes everything. And the players almost seem to be confused by it. That the City game is a great example for it, because attacking-wise, that was Marsch football. Defensive-wise, it was some sort of mix between Nagelsmann and Marsch, which meant that they were counter-pressing at the wrong time. They were too narrow in defense. And there's one goal, that the beautiful goal that Jack Grealish scores. Yes, it's a beautiful goal, but everyone was ball-watching. Like, you and I could have scored that goal, you know? And it's just like, I feel like they're almost imprisoned between what Marsch wants and what Nagelsmann taught them. And it's just leaving this entire group very confused. And I don't know what you feel about it, but I just think maybe Marsch wants a little bit too much from this team.
Yeah, I think I said to you maybe after the Manchester City game that I was like, it seems as though Marsch just doesn't know what his best start to living is. And it's almost at times it feels as though he's, I don't know if it's maybe pressure from the club or if it's just pressure from himself to very quickly establish, you know, a very thick border between when Nagelsmann left and when he took over, because you can kind of tell that from the teams he's been picking. You know, the way that Andre Silva's came into the team, the way that Szoboszlai's came into the team, even like Dani Olmo to an extent, the way that he's very clearly, I think, saying, okay, these are the guys who I'm going to build my attack around. And then guys like Forsberg and Poulsen. I mean, I know both have kind of started some games this season, but it feels to me whenever I watch Leipzig that it's like they're almost like the elder statesmen who have just had to accept that they're yesterday's, you know, they're kind of yesterday's heroes. And when things don't go wrong, Marsch is like, he panics and then he just throws both of them on, which is what we saw on Saturday. And we've seen that a few times since he came in. And it's almost like he's having to battle with his own, his best intentions, because more or less, Marsch could have stepped into this RB Leipzig side and done what Nagelsmann has done at Munich, which is inherit a team that was already quite good, well, in Bayern's case, obviously very good. But, you know, he could have quite easily inherited an RB Leipzig side that was more or less as it was that he accepted. Now, I know he would have lost two central defenders, and I know he then lost Sabitza, so I understand that. But he's obviously got Simakin, who's a very good centre-back. Orban's still there, so it's not as if he's had to revolutionise that defence. And there's absolutely no need for him to revolutionise that attack either. Unless, of course, the club spent a huge amount of money on Andrew Silva, so there's some degree of pressure to play him in every game. So I do wonder if this is internal politics of the club, because they're saying, look, we spent a lot of money on these attacking players. We want you to build your team around them. Or if this is Jesse Marsch himself saying, I have to differentiate myself from Julian Nagelsmann straight away. And then I think the overall fascinating thing about this, and this kind of goes back to what you were saying about these upcoming fixtures that they've got. They've got Hertha at home. They've got Club Brugge, the Champions League at home. They've got Bochum at home. And then they go away to Freiburg, and then they go away to PSG. I think those are before that Freiburg game, I think they've got three very winnable matches.
They have to win those games. I think those are must-win games. I think Köln was a must-win game already.
Yes, I would say so too. But then I think I kind of said this on an earlier podcast at the start of the season. I was like, well, Leipzig don't really, well, you know, in many ways, they're not like a traditional Bundesliga club. That's an understatement. But they also don't have that history and maybe the prestige or the tradition to put expectations on managers, because, you know, they've had like three or four managers in the Bundesliga in the entire history, and every single one of them's kind of slotted in, done a job, and then they've kind of went off. They've never had the situation where they have an expectation to be the second, third, or even the best team in the country. And when a manager isn't doing that, the club itself is going to have to sit down and figure out what to do. The club's never really been in that position yet until now. So, I mean, if we were to kind of swap maybe Jesse Marsch's situation with Marco Rosa at Dortmund, if Rosa had the start that Marsch has had, he would be under immense pressure, and Julian Nagelsmann would be as well. But because it's Leipzig, I do wonder if he's just going to be afforded a little more patience. But I guess we'll find out in these next few games.
It's an interesting one, because like, he is a Red Bull product, isn't he? And they made kind of a big deal out of the fact that he is, that he has come from New York to Leipzig as an assistant, to Salzburg, where he was successful. Although he had, interestingly, going there and talking to people, it wasn't all clear sailing. For example, he had some really big issues with Karim Adeyemi, which I didn't know until I spoke to some people there, and they basically told me, which, by the way, probably rules out a move of Karim Adeyemi to Leipzig, in case people wonder about that. I do think that Brandon Aaronson is going to Leipzig sooner rather than later, because I do think he's maybe the missing piece. But I do think that Leipzig almost put this expectation on them that this is a homegrown coach. We made this guy. He's American, and we need to be successful with him. And I do think the pressure of having to change all these things, I think they come mostly actually from Marsch, because having spoken to him, having interviewed him, I do think he puts this, he has a clear idea of how to play football, and he is American. He's very American. I mean, that's in a very good way, but that, you know, how they don't have necessarily the patience. Nagelsmann has the patience to go to a Bayern side, and also the luxury that in David Alaba and Jerome Boateng, certain players are gone. So he was able to put in Nian, so he was able to put in Stanisic, who have worked out quite well for him. And, you know, move Sané to the left and play together with Davies. Like, those things came almost naturally, right? Like, the transition that he's undergoing is almost a natural transition, whereas Leipzig's departures were forced. I mean, in the same way that Bayern have to replace Boateng and Alaba, Leipzig have to replace Upamecano and Konaté, and the players are there, but it's almost like he hasn't quite grasped it the same way, because it wasn't a natural transition. It's a more of an abrupt transition, and because Marsch is not making it better, because like, he could have just taken Nagelsmann's formation and slotted those players in, because they were very much scouted with Nagelsmann in mind, weren't they? And like, we can say, okay, Andre Silva is a new player, like, they haven't really had someone like that, but they scouted Sørloth to play the role that Silver is supposed to play now. So the system was designed to have a player like that, right? It's just they didn't have one. So they went out and spent a lot of money on one. And so it's like, I think maybe, and you hear it internally from Leipzig, a lot of people are asking to maybe go back to the Nagelsmann football because players are confused. So it's an interesting one. I think maybe to wrap up the Hulmarsh topic, I think the next few games are big. I think he has to win all of the games that you mentioned. He has to, because otherwise there's going to be an enormous amount of pressure, because yes, Leipzig are not under the same pressure than some of the other traditional teams, but I think they're very much used to Champions League football, aren't they? And it's very much a part of them growing a brand. And they've never been in a situation where they had to fire a coach in the Bundesliga. But I wonder, I mean, it could happen. And I do think he to go back to something that he said in the beginning of the season where he laughed kind of about Druck. Well, here it is, Jesse. That's Druck. That's being in the Bundesliga, being a Bundesliga head coach. And I mean, like, you're laughing, right? But it's true. Like, look at the situation in Dortmund, to maybe transition to our next topic. I watched the Dortmund game in full length after I came back from Salzburg last night. I watched the Zone broadcast in Germany, which is excellent, by the way. But one of the first things when the game started, at the start of the match, Watzke sits down, Sorg sits down, all in the main stand, right? And then Terzic sits right next to Watzke. The former Dortmund bench boss is now Marco Rose's boss. Now that's Druck, that's pressure, because there's a guy already sitting on the stands ready to replace you if you don't work out. That's the Bundesliga, right? Like, and I think almost Dortmund created the situation on purpose. I actually do think they created this on purpose, because they're like, okay, Marco, here's the keys to the Rolls, right? You're allowed to drive it, but you mess up, you put a scratch anywhere on that car, there's a guy up there who already knows how to drive the car, and he's willing to do it at a heartbeat. And we know he can do it. And that's interesting. I find that dynamic interesting. And I think it's kind of working out for them now, isn't it? Because they were amazing in that game. And they are carried by Haaland. And as you rightfully pointed out, Meunier, who's looking like a pretty good signing now. I do think that we kind of talked about Leipzig maybe challenging for the title as well. And I mean, Wolfsburg are still there too. We can't forget about them. But Dortmund looked like the team, pretty much the only team now that can beat Bayern to that title. What do you think?
You know, I feel like Wolfsburg fans probably tune into this podcast every week thinking, when are we going to get our moment in the sun? You know, the Mark Van Bommel army continues to march on undefeated. But no, I'm afraid we're going to go back to Dortmund again. And I'm going to kind of blow my own trumpet here. I said Dortmund will be the champions this season at the start of the... When we did a preview, I think we did. Did I say it on the podcast? Maybe I said it on Twitter. But
You did.
I think I said Dortmund. And I've kind of said in the past, and you kind of tweeted this during the game, actually. Or not tweeted, you texted during the game. You said, you know, Erling Haaland is going to drag them to that title. And that's how it feels every single week. And I actually thought this game was probably a perfect microcosm of Dortmund as a whole, because you have this team that are just incredible at scoring goals. And it's not just Haaland, it's Guerreiro's incredible volley, which we all know he's capable of doing from time to time. Or it's a Marco Reus turn and shot, or it's a Jude Bellingham run into the box. This team can just hurt you 100 different ways. It's not just Haaland, there's so much more to it than that. But they're also capable of just shipping two goals in the space of like 30 minutes or 20 minutes, and you know, causing a bit of a nervous end to the game. And, you know, I think I actually had a quick look at the stats this morning after the match day, and their XG has shot up by about 25%, I think. I haven't got the numbers to hand specifically. Their XG, so the goals that they would look to score, or the chances, I guess you can call it, has gone up by 29%. But the XG they're conceding per game to their opponents has gone up by 5%. And interestingly, they're conceding, I find this fascinating, the coincidence, they're conceding 0.61 more goals per game, but they're also scoring 0.61 more goals per game. So, you know, they've just kind of got this kind of rhythm in place where they just said, well, you know what, we're just going to score more goals than you. And I think that's kind of like a refreshing approach to take, to be honest with you. I don't think it would work for most teams, but when you have someone like Haaland up front who can head the ball in, who can out-sprint any defender, or as we saw on Sunday, just kind of do this bizarre looping chip over the goalkeeper.
Yeah,
the guy's capable of everything. So, you know, it is very much like Lewandowski. There's just no real way you can defend against him, because if you sit with four sets of defenders in the box, you'll still find that space. And yeah, and I think Dortmund looked good for it.
Yeah, I actually thought that fourth goal by Dortmund, I thought that was that encapsulates everything you just said. Because Union just thought they were back into the game, right? And Dortmund actually stayed pretty calm. And the passes before the game, it was really interesting. It was pass, pass, short pass, short pass, short pass. And then Hummels kind of almost stood with the ball and looked. And he looked up and then he placed that great ball. Like the Haaland goal was great, but that ball, it was perfect, wasn't it? And it dips on once and then Haaland just puts it in with this fantastic acrobatic Zlatan-esque volley. But it was almost like Dortmund, Hummels and Haaland at that moment realized, okay, fine, Union are back in the game. We need to open the gap to two goals again. And then they just did it. They did it. It was like click. It almost snapped. And that killed Union, didn't it? And I just thought, okay, yeah, they concede a lot of goals, but it's almost like they don't really worried about it. It was the same against Beşiktaş midweek where they conceded one late, but you didn't really get the sense that would be enough. And it is worrying when you concede that many goals. But if you have players like Mats Hummels and Haaland that can just switch back on and, you know, put a game to bed, is it really that worrying? I don't know.
No, I think the only kind of concern I have for Dortmund at this point in season is that Super Cup tie against Bayern. Yeah. And I know it was a Super Cup game, which isn't entirely serious, and I know there are players missing, but I do think to win this Bundesliga title, Dortmund have to have an edge over Bayern in one sense or another. It doesn't really have to be the very literal exchange of points. It doesn't have to be that Dortmund win the title by the 3 points that they beat Bayern with on any given match day, but it has to be some sort of, there has to be a psychological switch so that Bayern really fear playing Dortmund, because I think that was the main thing going all the way back to Klopp, maybe with Tuchel to an extent before he got chucked out, but Bayern feared Dortmund. They were scared of what they could do, and I think they do to an extent obviously fear Haaland, and you know, you can maybe analyse that game and say Dortmund had their chances, they could have maybe scored goals, but this kind of whole cavalier we'll score more than you approach works really well when you're playing Union or Cologne or Besiktas. But if they're coming up against a team like Bayern Munich who are beginning to really switch on defensively, then you might find that, you know, Haaland misses his two chances and then but Dortmund still concede those two goals. So I think they still have a bit to prove in that regard. And I'm not even sure we're going to see that be tested really until maybe when they come up against Leipzig, which won't be till November, I think. And they don't play Bayern again, or Wolfsburg even, actually. And they play both of them one after the other until early December. And, you know, with all due respect to Ajax and Sporting, I don't think they have a very difficult Champions League group either. Not to say that they can't drop points in those games, but neither of those teams are like one of these super clubs that Dortmund have to prove they can match on their day. So it'll be interesting to see how they kind of rumble on over the next couple of months, because I think they've actually got a decent run. Having said that, they could now go on and lose to Gladbach this weekend. But I think they've got a decent run. But I'm excited by them. I'm optimistic about them, especially with Haaland in that team. But they still have to go out there and prove that they can do what no Dortmund team have really done since Klopp was in charge, which is really get Bayern scared of them.
Yeah, have a good run of games. As you said, next weekend against Gladbach, Bayern are in Fürth, where the game that I'm going to on Friday. And yeah, maybe Wolfsburg will put in a challenge in too. And maybe next week we're actually going to talk about them, Stefan. But unfortunately, we're out of time, so it has to be next week. Yeah, what I mean, at this stage, what do you want to promote? Is there anything you want to point people to before we call it a day?
I would just say I do put together a newsletter on the Bundesliga every week. It comes out every Wednesday. I try to bring it out every Wednesday morning, but it's usually around midday UK time. So it's completely free, and you can sign up to it. There's a wee button on my Twitter account, so you can just find it on there. And yeah, if you like it, give it a retweet on Twitter or give it a sign up. It's completely free. And it's just kind of stats, look at usually one interesting topic in the Bundesliga each week. I might even do Wolfsburg this weekend or this week. Who knows?
Awesome stuff. Well, yeah, and you can find me as always on Twitter at ManuelF. That's it from this week. Until next week, auf Wiedersehen.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.